The film Four Weddings and a Funeral is well known for lots of different reasons. One of those reasons is its final scene, which contains one of the silliest lines in a movie, which has Andy McDowell and Hugh Grant in the rain, and Andy McDowell gets to say the line, "Is it raining? I hadn't noticed." Richard Curtis, who wrote it, was clearly having an off day when he wrote that bit. But the line that follows that scene, or rather that particular line, is spoken by Hugh Grant. And really, it's the culmination of the whole of that film and its themes. This is what Hugh Grant says to Annie McDowell's character. "Do you think, after we've dried off, after we've spent lots more time together, you might agree not to marry me?" They'd met each other through a series of traumatic, let's say, weddings and one funeral. And so at the end of the film, it seems like marriage is the worst thing that they could do. Now, if you look at a line like that, it sort of makes sense, I suppose, in the text of the rest of the film, but it's still a surprising line. Because the idea of marriage as the goal, as the aim, as the happily ever after at the end of a film is still a strong one, isn't it? From the classic Disney films, where there is literally a happily ever after, usually around a wedding day, to the latest rom-com, to even, frankly, thrillers and action films who decide that the best way to finish things off is for the couple to get together at the end, everywhere seems to be driving towards a desire to get to the wedding scene and the couple finally together. Indeed, it's not just something we see in movies, is it? It's something we encounter in our society at large. One of the aims of life, it would seem, if you stop people in the street and ask them, would be to find the one person who you can spend the rest of your life with, the one person who you truly click with, the one person who you can say those wedding vows to. And my guess is that many of us here would see that as a goal for our lives, to find the right relationship, and therefore to find satisfaction and completeness in that romantic relationship. Well, our theme for this evening is all about what married people can teach us. And marriage can indeed teach us a great deal. Marriage shows us that we are made for a deep and lasting and life-changing relationship. Marriage teaches us that as human beings, we are to find our identity, our satisfaction, our completeness in this relationship. And this special connection with somebody else ought to be the focus and the center of our lives. And marriage teaches us that marriage is not that relationship. You see, marriage tells us about the gospel. That's the real title for this evening. What do married people teach us about the gospel? Christian marriage, in particular, points us to Jesus and our relationship with him. That is the true relationship that we need. It is that connection with the living Christ that is the meaning of our lives and the focus of our identity. And marriage? And married people can teach us something about this fundamental and most important relationship of all. So listen in, because if you're married this evening, you have an opportunity to teach something profound about the gospel in the way that you live your life and the way that you do your marriage. And whether we're married or we're single, we all have something to learn about the gospel from marriage. And really, there is only one lesson, and it's this. Marriage is meant to mirror the gospel. Marriage is meant to mirror the gospel. See, in our Bible passage for this evening, the Apostle Paul is writing to the Christians in Ephesus, and he writes to instruct them very practically about what it means to live the Christian life. And as he does so, he talks about issues in the household, and particularly including marriage. And as he explains what Christian marriage looks like, he talks about marriage in this way. Verse 32, he says, "This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church." See, much of what Paul has to say about marriage is summed up in those words. I'm talking about Christ and the church. To talk about marriage is to talk about Christ and the church. The first and the most important relationship in all of life is that of Jesus with his people. And marriage is meant as a picture of that first and greatest relationship. The church reformer Martin Luther, who I have a habit of quoting in almost every sermon, so I had to get in this one, put it this way. He said, human marriages are but poor examples of this one true marriage, that is, between Christ and his people. That is the true and greatest marriage, the marriage between Jesus and his bride, the church. And human marriages are designed to point towards that great truth. Now, don't get me wrong, marriage is a good, a God-given gift, a good thing in and of itself. So therefore, marriage is something that we should honour and protect. Even amongst secular society, it is something God has given to us. But it is designed specifically to point to a greater good. And we will lose something if we fail to see marriage in this way. So, how does this happen? If that's the key point, that's what Paul wants us to take away from here. Marriage is meant to mirror the gospel. What does that look like? How do we learn the gospel by the example of married couples around us? Well, let me highlight a few different ways. First of all, marriage is meant to mirror the gospel in love. You see, in marriage, our love for our spouse shows God's love towards us. I think it's fascinating to see how the theme of marriage as a picture of God's love to us runs through the whole of the Bible. If you've got plenty of time on your hands, I'd encourage you to read through the whole Bible, look through it and look for those themes of God's love as pictured in marriage. It comes up again and again. And again and again, God's love for his people is described in terms of a lover and a beloved. A wife and a husband. Now, there is a danger as we think about this, that we might begin to say, well, God's love for us is a little bit like love in marriage. But if we think about it that way, we've got it the wrong way round. Because what is really true is that our love in marriage is a little bit like God's love for us. On our very best days, those of us who are married, the love that we show to our wife or to our husband reflects the love of God, but it reflects just a tiny little minuscule amount. It's like capturing the rays of the sun and perhaps getting a little magnifying glass and focusing it down. You get real power. You can even sort of set things alight with it, but it's only a fraction of the output, the power of the sun. So if you like, Christian marriage, a husband and a wife loving each other, is like a lens focusing a little tiny bit of the love of God, making it visible, making it shown to be powerful, but only a fraction of God's love. And that's really what Paul says in verse 25. He says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. That is the standard of love in marriage. Because that's the standard of love of God for his people. So if you're single here this evening and you're thinking, I'd love to get married, well, this is the kind of love that you're meant to foster in marriage. And if you are married, this is the kind of love that you're meant to show in marriage. The love that God has for his people. That he was willing to give all, to sacrifice all, to save those he loves. And that is what we're called to do. We're called to mirror that kind of love in our marriages. And Christian marriages, however imperfectly, are meant to teach something of that love to those who get to look in. It's the kind of love that people should learn as they look at my marriage. That is a very scary thought. Because I know I don't love like that. I know I don't love as I ought to. It's an enormously high bar to try and get over. But the question is not, do I love this way all the time perfectly? Because I never will. Remember, only a tiny fraction of God's love. The real question is, do I want to love this way? Perhaps the even better question is, do I pray that God would enable me to love this way? And if you have married friends, do you pray for them that their love in marriage would represent the love of God to the world? That is a great thing to pray for their marriage and for any married people you know. You see, marriage is to mirror the gospel in love. And then secondly, marriage is to mirror the gospel in faithfulness. Once again, if you're married, as you live in a faithful way with your husband and your wife, your faithfulness shows God's faithfulness to us. You see, throughout the Bible, God is shown to be the ultimate faithful husband. Again, just a little bit like that picture of love, our faithfulness in marriage is nothing compared to God's faithfulness to us. One of my favorite books of the Bible is the book of Hosea. And I love it for lots of different reasons. But one of the reasons is because God there is pictured as a husband to his people Israel. And yet his people Israel are repeatedly unfaithful to him. They go off and worship other gods. They go off and trust in other nations. And so what God does is he calls on his prophet Hosea to act out the relationship of God and his people. So what God does is he tells Hosea, right, I've picked out someone for you to marry. And he says to Hosea, there's this woman, Gomer. You're going to go and marry Gomer. Now, at best, it's a little difficult to tell, at best, God knows that Gomer will be unfaithful to Hosea. At worst, it's possible to read that as if Gomer is in fact a prostitute already. So the next time, if you're single, you pray that God would reveal to you the person that you're going to marry, just think of Hosea. Now, what's the point of all this? The point of all this is that because Hosea is then called to be faithful to Gomer, he is to do that even though she is unfaithful to him. Hosea is not talking about something generally about the way that women act and the way that men act. It's played out in the lives of these two individuals. But Hosea is to be faithful to Gomer even though Gomer is unfaithful to Hosea. And the reason why? Because Hosea's relationship mirrors God's relationship with his people. I encourage you to go away and read the first three chapters of Hosea. That's really the story bit. And you'll find that Hosea's faithfulness makes no earthly sense. You go to a secular marriage counselor. If Hosea went to a secular counselor and he recounted everything that happened, I'm pretty sure they would say, look, you're in a dire relationship, mate. You've just got to cut her loose. She's damaging. Hosea's faithfulness to Gomer makes no earthly sense, but it makes every bit of heavenly sense. Because this is the way that God acts towards us. So after Gomer leaves Hosea for another man, God says to him, go show your love to your wife again. Though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress, love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods. God is faithful. And married people are to teach the gospel in their faithfulness to one another, because it shows just a fraction of the faithfulness of God towards us. How do we do that? Well, I think one of the key areas of faithfulness is that of sexual expression. God has given committed heterosexual marriage as the framework for sexual activity. And those who are married are called to honor that by not looking outside of marriage for what they should find inside of marriage. Faithfulness means not looking for sex with anyone else other than my wife. But you know, faithfulness to God's framework of marriage extends beyond just those who are married. Because single people too have the opportunity to keep the boundaries of marriage and therefore protect marriage's picture of the gospel. You see, when we seek to have sex outside of the bond of marriage, whether we're married or whether we're single, we blur the lines of marriage. We try and break the boundaries. We try and rub out the lines that God has put there because we rather would like things to be different. And if we do so, if we begin to blur the lines or rub them out, we obscure the picture of marriage that God has given to show the gospel. So if we're married, we can protect the lines of the picture of the gospel by not looking for sexual enjoyment outside of marriage when we should find it inside. And if we're single, we can protect the lines of marriage by being faithful to the way that God has designed marriage and also not look for sex outside of the bond of marriage. Because we learn the gospel, we mirror the gospel in faithfulness. Here's the third thing. We also learn the gospel, we meant to mirror the gospel in holiness. I wonder, as Fiona read our passage for us, whether you noticed how holiness and marriage are very closely linked in Paul's words. So look with me at verses 25 to 27. Paul says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless." Marriage is meant to mirror the gospel, and one dimension of that is through holiness. Now, please don't mishear me. I'm not saying or suggesting that getting married somehow magically makes you holy. There can be a way to think that way, can't it? A lot of people can expect that as soon as somebody gets either engaged or married, they've magically become mature overnight. Now, I've done a lot of marriage preparation courses with a lot of people. I can tell you that doesn't happen. You don't suddenly become a different person overnight when you get married. You've still got the same trials and temptations on your wedding day as you had the night before. And also, spiritual maturity doesn't suddenly appear overnight when you get married either. No, it's simply not the way that marriage works. So when I say marriage and holiness are connected, it's not that getting married makes you holy. But what marriage can do is expose your need for holiness. And we know, I hope, that we all need to grow in holiness. We don't live for God in the way that we would want to or the way that we ought to. We ought to be able to grow in holiness. But the danger is we can begin to kid ourselves that we are holier than we actually are. Is that just me? I don't think it is. When left to ourselves, we can think, well, actually, I'm a pretty good guy. I'm doing okay. I don't really need to do very much work on my character and on my holiness. And we hide away those areas of our lives where we need to grow. Now, there is nothing like sharing your life day by day intimately with another person to reveal that you need to grow in holiness. Because you can't hide from them. However much you'd like to tuck that stuff away from everyone else, if you're sharing your life with another person in marriage, well, then you will know, and they will know, the areas where you need to grow. It's been said that marriage is rather like a massive truck that runs over the bridge of your life. You know, imagine that massive, weighted down truck as it rumbles across the bridge and cracks begin to appear. Now, the lorry did not create the weaknesses in the bridge. It simply exposed the weaknesses that were already there. And so it is with marriage to a certain extent. Marriage doesn't create difficulties in our character, areas where we need to grow in holiness, but marriage is a very good way of revealing those areas. And what marriage can do for those who are married, is force us to be honest about our need for holiness. We can't hide the parts of our lives that God needs to work on from our wife or our husband. But what is very sad is that far too often, we as married couples try to hide them from everyone else. So we may have to be very honest with our wife or our husband, and probably therefore very honest with ourselves. But when we come to church, when we come to our life group, when we share with other people, we can still put on that wonderful facade that everything is going wonderfully well and pretend that we don't need to grow. You see, that honesty about holiness and the honesty of our need for it and our need to grow is something we all need, regardless of our marital status. It is not something for married people only. It is for everyone. It's something that should mark us out as a church. But we can put on that nice mask at church and pretend all is well. And the only difference if you're married is that your husband or wife, who probably is sitting next to you, knows full well that is not who you are. So let me issue a call to those who are married. Can we take the lead in being honest about holiness? Since we have to be honest with our spouse anyway, since they know our weaknesses, since they know that we need to grow, why don't we be more honest with one another? Once again, it's not for married people only. I know single people who are a great example of honesty about trials and temptations and who would put many married people to shame. But perhaps as married people, we need to break the facade and let people into the reality. And opening up our lives means probably opening up our doors, sharing our lives with one another, welcoming them into the mess and difficulty of our lives. See, too often we can buy into the popular view of marriage that we get from our culture, that marriage is a private affair. It's just two people who love each other so much that they just sort of hide away in their love. But that's not the biblical picture of marriage at all. Marriage in the Bible is outward looking and serving others. So if we're married, why don't we try and teach the gospel by inviting others in and being honest about the ways in which we know we need to grow and encourage that honesty amongst everyone? So three areas in which marriage is meant to mirror the gospel: in love, in faithfulness, in holiness. Here's the final one. Marriage is meant to mirror the gospel in devotion. But here's the thing. It's not in devotion to one another, primarily. It is in devotion to Jesus. You see, did you see how Paul began this section in verse 21? He begins it all by saying, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Reverence for Christ is the overarching theme. Our relationship with Jesus is of greater importance than marriage. And as Christians, we can easily get into the trap of getting wrapped up in the value of marriage. Because after all, it is a valuable thing. It is given as a gift from God, and it is a wonderfully good thing. But it is not the best thing. And too easily, we can slip into thinking that marriage will solve all our problems. Marriage will make us who we are meant to be. Marriage will make us complete. Well, can I tell you, as someone who's about to celebrate their 20th wedding anniversary in a few weeks, it won't. It won't do all those things. It is a wonderfully good gift from God. It is something to be celebrated and enjoyed, but it won't solve all your problems. And let me tell you that marriage can be a real problem if you enter into it with that mindset. Because you will be placing onto marriage a weight that it was never designed to bear. You see, only Christ can save us. Only Christ can make us who we're truly meant to be. Only Christ can make us complete. And married people, on our best days, can teach the gospel by showing that marriage isn't everything. It isn't the be-all and end-all of life. There is a better and more wonderful relationship to pursue. The relationship with our Creator and our Redeemer, the Lord Jesus Christ. Married people can remind us of this in the way that they live and in the way that they approach marriage. And indeed, single people can do the same in the way that they live and in the way that they approach singleness. But we'll think more about that next week. But whether we're married or whether we're single, our greatest good is not marriage or it's not singleness. It is Jesus Christ.